SROA Soundboard, a podcast for radiation oncology administrators. I'm Tammy McCausland. James Potter, author of The Successful Manager, is joining us today. Welcome, James.
Thank you. Thank you. Happy to be here.
Can you tell me briefly about your background and why you wrote The Successful Manager?
Sure. So I've been working with leadership teams for the last 15 years, and I've worked with over 125 companies in those leadership teams that range from $50 million in revenue to $50 billion in revenue. And I found over these years two commonalities. One of those commonalities is few companies provide true manager training, and they just default to leadership training, and they leave new managers kind of to their own devices. And then the second commonality is the companies that were successful, you realize, really did rely on their middle manager position, the feet on the street, for being so critical to being successful. So the growth athletes really paid better attention to trying to develop them over time. And they had a really strong bench versus the laggards of companies that couldn't grow very well, really just forgot that middle management layer is just so important. So when I saw that, it was really an important thing to say, look, this doesn't just have to be an apprenticeship model. You can codify some of the best practices. You can train people to be better managers. It's not just an inherent skill. It can be learned. So the book is really meant not just to give the high level of why, but also get into the details of the how and be very practical for people that just haven't had the training from their employers.
I'd like to ask you a question about something you said. You said that they tend to give leadership training rather than management training. What's the difference?
Great question. So the first and foremost thing is you actually can't get to be a great leader until you are a great manager. Leadership tends to involve painting really big pictures for people, driving very large cohorts together, and leading from the front. It's just a different scale of operations. Versus management tends to be more practical, smaller oriented teams. You still have to do a lot of the same things, but you are a much more frontline player than you are in a leadership role. So similar skills, but all the leadership books out there and leadership trainings are geared towards CEOs or CEO minus one versus just becoming a new manager or a new leader. And so it's just a different scale, but you tend to have very similar roles and functionalities, but you are on the more front line, fighting with the troops, if you will, in the management role.
Thanks for clarifying. I learned something new. Why is the figure it out approach the norm when people are promoted to a management role?
There's several reasons. It's very legacy oriented. So if you wind back the clock, several decades ago, a lot of management was thought as, okay, this is a trait that you are born with to have what is what's called soft skills, I like to call human skills, and therefore it's harder to train on those. That would be one reason, which is not true. You can learn that skill, those human skills. It takes a little more practice if they're not more inherent to you. You can learn them. The second piece was many years ago, management had a much more important role in the success of a company, and it still does. But what you're realizing as companies get bigger and bigger and bigger, that middle management layer becomes more and more important, and those frontline managers become more and more important. And so there's this transition that has needed to occur of really driving more attention to that frontline manager that just hasn't really occurred because people have overlooked it, that its importance, and overlooked the capability of actually building human skills within someone as opposed to just saying that person's got it.
Interesting. In your first chapter, you write, becoming a top tier manager should be your number one professional goal. Why do you make such a bold statement?
So I would say that statement needs to be have some boundaries put against it. So if your goal is to rise up the corporate ladder and move up to a leadership position, or if your goal is to really affect multiple people around you, that should be your top priorities. If your goal is to stay as an individual contributor and you really like what you're doing, you don't want to move forward, you don't have to be a good manager because that's not in your aspirations. But if you do want to go up, you need to go forward. And if you don't, what happens if you don't become a good manager, you really get pigeonholed into being that individual contributor or being that bad manager. And it stifles what you are doing. It is the biggest force multiplier on your career, if that's what you want, and your ability to impact people of almost anything that you can do in business.
What's the hardest part about being a great manager?
For it changes for everyone. But for me, I'll talk specifically for myself, is forcing the discipline of self-reflection and saying, I really could get better at that, and understanding what I really need to get better on. But forcing that discipline on a daily, weekly, monthly, annual cadence, because it's hard to change, but it's even harder to really recognize and be true to yourself what I'm not good at and what I need to improve on. That tends to be the hardest thing for people, but it does change for everyone, because everyone is just built different.
So where does the input from the self-reflection come from? I mean, some of us are very self-aware, but there are people who may think they're great managers, but they're not. So at what point, tied to my first question, at what point do you go out and get external input for the self-reflection?
Yeah, so one thing that's really important for self-reflection is to have a North Star or a guidepost on what am I reflecting against. So I use the analogy teacher, which stands for seven different qualities that are really important for managers to have. And that's transparency, empathy, adaptability, clear communication, humility, and effectiveness, and responsive and respectfulness. And you have to understand those are the qualities you have to embody, and then take that as basically saying, look, I need to get there. Am I not good at being transparent? What does good transparency look like that I can measure myself against? All too often people sit there and they self-reflect, oh, I'm pretty good at being transparent, but they don't know what good looks like. No one's ever laid out what good looks like. So they really need to focus on that.
So that ties into my question about your second chapter, which is called The Seven Characteristics of Great Managers. I wanted to know, why is it the second chapter in your book? And you've kind of talked about the characteristics, but how do people develop those characteristics?
Yeah, so it's the second chapter in the book solely because the first chapter is really about why it's important to be a good manager if you want to move up. And so whenever I'm talking to a cohort of people or working with someone one-on-one, the first thing to understand is, do they really want to change as a manager? Is it really important to them? And once they realize or don't realize that this is important, then you can kind of start the journey. Well, what does good look like? And what doesn't good look like? So that's why it's chapter two, not chapter one. Relative to how they develop those skills, it often comes down to first internalizing what's really important about each of these things and what does good look like, right? And so again, building that guidepost of what does good look like relative to being empathetic as a manager, relative to being adaptable as a manager or good communication. And then starting to sit there and say, okay, yeah, I do that as a best practice. I don't do that as a best practice. And really thinking about it daily, weekly, monthly, and annually. And I'm not saying that every day you have to spend an hour thinking about, am I a good manager? In a day period, I may just sit back and say, hey, was there anything that just didn't sit with me well, or I feel like I could have done better? And that's a 5 minutes maximum reflection. And I usually do that as a kind of bedtime type of thing. And then weekly, I'll think about it at a little higher level, and I'll then take my actions and say, was I transparent enough? Could I have been more transparent in the things I'm doing? And I'll throw it against those different seven criteria. And then monthly, I sit back and I say, okay, this is usually an hour exercise at the end of every month, where I'll think about, okay, where could I have gotten better? And then on an annual basis, I will spend 2 to 4 hours at the end of the year saying, like, what did I learn throughout this year as I went through this journey? What did I get better at? And what is my major goal for next year? And I'll actually send myself an email or advise the people that I work with to send themselves an email at the end of every year saying, here's basically one thing that I did really well and I improved on, two things that I could do a lot better on going forward. And I'll send myself that, or I'll have other people send themselves. And it's really interesting how you can see yourself evolving if you look back through the emails every time. And at the end of every year, I look back at the last year's email and the year before and read through that. It's just a good, you can see the trajectory that you're taking or what you didn't improve on, frankly, that you wanted to.
Seems like a very simple but effective tool, especially if you look retrospectively.
It will force yourself to say, oh, I didn't do that. And I really should do that going forward.
And I guess it's also interesting to see, as you said, like the stuff that maybe you have intentions to improve on. And then you, if you check back, you can see whether you've actually made changes or if that's still a growth area.
Exactly. And it's okay to skip over certain things. In life, we all do what I call porpoising. You just get so busy with certain things that pull you aside that you forget other things. And maybe you porpoised on one of the things you really wanted to do, but you didn't get a chance to do it. And so that self-reflection of, hey, did I do this last year? Did I not? You can say, well, I tried and it didn't work. So I have to do something else. Or, you know, I had it on my list, but I just got pulled away from it. I just didn't spend the attention on it. It's that type of honesty with yourself is the only way to really, really get better.
And how do you give yourself permission to excuse the things that you really intended to do better on, but may not have due to those things you're talking about? Those, like, for example, the pandemic, you know, just changed everything for everybody. So now that we're kind of getting back to a kind of a post-pandemic life, how do you give yourself permission when you have good intentions, but you don't maybe carry through?
So you have to sit back and really think about what was in my control versus out of my control. And if it's out of your control, you can self-rationalize a little bit and say, hey, you know, I'm going to try harder next time, but this was out of my control. So the pandemic was out of your control. And let's say it was the pandemic and your kids were home for a long period of time, and it literally just sucked up an extra 2 or 3 hours of your day. That's pretty much out of your control, and you have to really focus on prioritizing. But in your control could be, hey, I didn't spend enough time here because I wanted to do something else with the time that I allotted to having a discipline around making myself better. And that is in your control, and then you have to own that decision. I made the decision to do this. I'm happy with that decision, but that means maybe deprioritizing being a better manager. I would always say there aren't excuses. You have to own every decision that you make. And if you decide to deprioritize it, then that's your decision. If there's outside circumstances, then you can self-rationalize into that to a degree. But again, it comes down to your decision. You chose not to go forward with it because in this case, you had to. Your children at home needed more time and attention, and you couldn't have as much time to work. But now that we're out of the pandemic, hopefully, going back to that example, and kids are back at school, that you can spend more time on being a good manager.
That's great. What are the best resources employers can give their managers to become more effective?
The best resource is time. Mm-hmm. So when a leader can spend time with a developing manager, where it doesn't have to be the CEO doing it, but when someone above or someone next to that person that's been in the manager role for a long time can just spend more time coaching, that is the best resource that a corporation can give. There's a lot of trainings that do help. There's a lot of books that have been coming out that you can start to read about it. But time is the number one thing. And if organizations, some really good organizations that I've worked with, actually had formal mentoring programs for new managers where they actually assign someone. You could kind of pick a cohort and they'd assign someone to you where you'd have a monthly sit down where you typically, the corporation would actually say, hey, for the first 6 months, we want you to talk about these things in your sit down with your mentor. But after that, it was an open book and then time was short a little bit, but they forced that time. So time is the number one thing that corporations can give, in my mind.
And how can leaders support their managers in this new hybrid work environment we find ourselves in, especially in the healthcare context where you have, in radiation oncology specifically, where some people have to be on site, but they found a lot of the back office people don't necessarily have to. So how can leaders support their hybrid teams and their diverse teams working circumstances to be effective managers?
It's a great question, and we've seen so many changes because of the pandemic, but a big one for organizations is companies did, if you go back to the very beginning, companies did a pretty good job for the first, we'll call it 9 to 12 months of the pandemic, kind of holding it together and operating as best as they could status quo. But then we saw months, let's say 13 to 24, and getting closer to where we are now, really start to unravel from how teams and companies executed. They became very siloed. So a team in one area really didn't talk to a team in another area or a cross-functional team. And even that team in that one area lost oftentimes connections because they got really basically fatigued about having a daily stand-up with their team. And so what leaders need to do is lead by example in bringing and breaking down those silos and forcing more cross-functional meetings, more daily or weekly stand-ups across the team, where you have a very set agenda of what you talk about, and then some open topics at the end. It doesn't have to be rocket science, but it's really more about breaking down those silos so people feel that they can communicate and lead by example by doing that. So the better leaders are actually changing how they operate right now in terms of their cadence on a weekly, monthly basis with the functional teams and cross-functional meetings, because we just saw in the last 12 months, basically, all these silos go up because people just weren't talking as much, but it was okay for the first 6 to 12 months of the pandemic.
Interesting. Every great book has aha moments readers can connect with. What would you say are the aha moments from your book that people have shared with you?
I think the self-reflection towards what good looks like and the seven qualities is the number one thing that people talk about. That's the teacher analogy there. But how do you self-reflect against that? That's where people have said they've driven the most change in their own behavior of, hey, I now know what good looks like. I only had a bad manager before, as an example, and I didn't know what really it meant to be adaptable as a manager because they were not adaptable. That has been the biggest aha moment in comments and feedback that I get from people in coaching systems. The second thing is really around the way that you give feedback. So we call it SBIS, which is Situation Behavior Impact Solution. It's a very clear way of giving feedback where you as the manager take yourself out of the equation. So the person you're giving the feedback to in no way can blame you. It's very factual. It's, look, this was the situation. This was your behavior that everyone observed. Here was the impact that made on other people around the table. And here's the solution I think we could take to improve and change that impact. People have really liked that because all too often you don't get coaching on how to give feedback as a manager. And they'll do things like the feedback sandwich where they'll say, hey, Mr. and Mrs. Employee, you're great at this, but you need to improve this, but you're still good. And the feedback sandwich is good, two good pieces. And that's terrible because the person comes out with, oh no, I'm good. I just had something a little I got to improve on. So SBIS is a really powerful way to give feedback. And that's another thing that people have really taken away from the book.
Yeah, it's interesting because I'm very familiar with the feedback sandwich, but I'm not familiar with SBIS. And I'm sure a lot of people who listen to the podcast will also probably feel like they need a better way. What key takeaways would you share with healthcare administrators specifically regarding management in your book?
So of almost every field I've worked with over the last 2 years, the healthcare field and healthcare administration field is one of the most challenged because of this pandemic. It's just a pressurized kettle. And when things are a pressurized kettle, very similar, like managing through a crisis, you have to take each employee in their own right and really understand their situation. How pressurized is their kettle, and what can you do to release some of that pressure? So focus more on empathy, focus more with individual people, have a sit down and have a human conversation before you get into a business conversation, and take the temperature of that person, not literally, figuratively, you are in healthcare, and see what's going on. The more you can use that, that characteristic and flex that muscle, the better off you and your organization are going to be, and people are going to want to work for you more. It's just, it's managing through a crisis is a key thing, and that empathy is really important.
Interesting. What is not in the book that would be relevant to healthcare administrators?
That's a great question. I would say what's not in the book and what was planned for book 2.0, if you will, in the sense, is a true change in an operating model of a company. And so depending on where you are on the healthcare spectrum, the change toward outcome-based care, you're gonna have to, the managers on the ground, people that are working with doctors, everyone is going to have to change how they operate, how they manage, and what they're geared towards. And so that transition and managing through not a crisis, but a true change of how the business measures itself and what you're doing going forward and how fast you have to do things or how effective you have to do things. That's different. That's change management. And so that's something that we'll be working on, but that's not in the book.
And so is there a Successful Manager 2 book coming out?
There will be. I would probably say I'm working on a different book right now, focused on growth innovation, but there will be a Successful Manager 2.0. I'll probably call it in early 2023.
Awesome. It was wonderful to speak with you today. I really appreciate your time.
Absolutely. Thank you for the time, Tammy. My pleasure.
Thank you for listening to SROA Soundboard. We hope you will join us again. For more information, visit www.sroa.org.